Star Trek Into Darkness gets a C-plus from Greg Wyshynski. It's got a case of Superman Returns disease, where it's way too beholden to movies that were better.
What's with you lately in the songs? What's going on?
I can't tell you, man. Star Trek was solid. I did 4 hours of Trek last night with my buddy Moyer, who went to go see the original 2009 J.J. Abrams Trek, followed by Star Trek Into Darkness at midnight. And I have to admit that it's an okay movie. It's entertaining. The characters remain really great, and it's so perfectly well cast that you'll be entertained by it. But the plot is just thuddingly dumb. And the, like I said in my opening song, it is beholden to a movie in the Trek series that came well before it and is considered to be one of the best of the series, if not the best, and one of the best sci-fi films of all time. I think you can smell what the Rock is cooking here if you're a Trek fan. Yeah. It is to the point where they are replicating key scenes from that very film with a little bit of a twist, and you say to yourself, you know what? You worked really hard to kind of like separate the timelines in the first movie. Alternate reality. You go off, do your own adventure. Hey, Kirk could die. Who knows? Spock could die. Who knows? It's all on the table now because you've set up that you're in a different timeline than what happened previously. And then you kind of tie it all back to the old stuff again in this next one. It was just like been there, done that in a lot of ways. And it ultimately wasn't successful.
Okay. Let me ask you this then.
Please.
I was never much of a Trek guy. I was always more of a Star Wars guy growing up than Star Trek. But nonetheless,
God bless you, sir.
Thank you. All right. But I, as the minute I saw Jar Jar Binks, I tuned out and haven't gone back. Anyway, it's true. I was that guy that never went back. That was me. Let me ask you this: the last thing I saw of Star Trek was Wrath of Khan.
Uh huh.
Would I be able to jump in right now and see the latest one?
One might say that's the perfect spot to pick up this next one.
Is that right, eh? It goes that far back?
I'm not trying to spoil the movie for anybody, but it definitely connects to previous editions of the series in a very specific way, and ultimately a very disappointing way. But yeah, it was good. I mean, like, again, I ain't trying to poo-poo it. It ain't a bad movie. You'll go, you'll be entertained. Pine's great. Quinto's greatest Spock, Benedict Cumberbatch, the TV Sherlock, which is, by the way, the best TV series that you're not watching. They're all great, but, you know, it is what it is. I'll say this, though, Merrick. You know, watching so much hockey, working weird hours, had some insomnia the previous night. 4 hours in a movie theater watching these Trek movies was a little rough. So I did something I had never done before. It was a little rough, a little rough for the sleepies, you know.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, I know that, bud. Was me, right?
I know that.
So before the midnight screening of Star Trek Into Darkness, I ordered a medium popcorn, so I have something to pick at during the film, you know, kind of keep me alert. A medium Coke, which was the size of a water tower, because that's how movies are today. And I ordered a latte. And let me tell you right now, the latte obviously so I can get a little caffeine in me. If you've never experienced the buttery goodness of salted popcorn with the creamy texture of a latte, may I suggest that you never do. It felt
someone
had painted my tongue with Dutch Boy. It was disgusting. I can't even tell you how bad I felt. I was alert and the caffeine worked, but overall, pretty much the worst experience that I've ever had eating a bag of popcorn.
See,
and by the way, the whole bag, you people. I'm not that fat, and I've been eating cupcakes for the last 2 weeks, so I'm not going to eat a whole bag of popcorn too.
I thought you were going to go the other way around. That you know, a latte infused popcorn was something special. And you've got this whole new your chocolates and my peanut butter type discovery. No,
no, but chocolate and popcorn is great. Like if you get some snow caps or some peanut M&Ms or whatever, and pour in the popcorn, that's solid. But yeah, the coffee and popcorn thing was not something I think I'll be revisiting again.
Hey,
but anyways,
this is a quick aside about food and flavor. You know, what I can never figure out why people never capitalized on. Like everything has become flavor now. I mean, go look at the potato chip aisle and see how many selections you have. Never mind. And listen, you went to the Olympics last summer. When you're in England, how many different varieties of potato chips with unique flavors did you see? Like insane, right? Like, yeah, the world now is taking a staple food and add new flavor to it because we're out of food. And all we can do now, like, we're out of food choice. All we can do now is flavor the same foods we've been eating. You know, I can never figure out what people never came across or never flavored.
What's that?
Cigarettes. You know, for kids, like to get kids like an orange or grape, you know, a strawberry cigarette, like an on-ramp cigarette for kids.
I mean, they don't have cigarettes. They have flavored cigars, though. They have grape and cherry.
Yeah,
and
not the same thing.
Cigars. But it's not the same as cigarettes.
Like for a kid who wants to start, but you know, some of the Camels, your Marlboro's a little bit too rough, so you go with a flavored smoke, like a strawberry smoke, some of the lighter raspberry. You know, I'm gonna have a grape flavored cigarette. Something for the kids, wish.
I realized our society was going into decline when they started banning the bubblegum cigarettes you used to be able to buy in the candy store next to the Joy Buzzer and the Whoopee Cushion, because honestly, like, that's what prevents a kid from smoking. It's not something that makes a kid smoke. It's a way for kids to smoke without smoking. So the more toy guns and candy cigarettes, in all honesty, that you take away from kids, the more they're going to seek out the real thing. In all honesty, that's how I believe the society works.
See, because I used to eat those. Remember Popeye cigarettes? You remember Popeye cigarettes? Remember those things? Little candies. They look like cigarettes,
but, right?
Yeah, those things. Popeyes.
Awesome.
Those are great.
Totally. Right. Uh-huh.
Anyway, flavored smokes. That's one of my planks.
You take away little poppers you throw on the ground, you know what a kid's going to search out? A grenade. So, I mean, honestly, it just becomes a way to keep kids away from weapons of mass destruction. Last night, while I was watching Trek, I went back and revisited the game this morning on my DVR. The Blackhawks win 4-1 over Detroit. An interesting effort. 3 goals. In the third period, including a boom-boom 1-2 punch within 3 minutes by Johnny Oduya and Marcus Kruger.
What
do you think? Really came on strong, the Hawks, after that first period. 25 shots in the last two periods. What did you think of the effort last night by Chicago?
Here's how I looked at it. This is how we described it yesterday on Hockey Central. So I do my, like, minute-and-a-half highlight pack. And there's some, you know, flashpoint moments. So Carcillo digs the puck out from behind Howard. Kruger gets a nice little backhand goal. Johnny Oduya with a great wrist shot. Hossa scores again. A couple of great saves by Jimmy Howard. If you just looked at the highlights of the game, it would give you a false representation of what that game was about. Because that game was a snooze. Everyone's expecting, you know, it's Chicago, it's Detroit, it's the 900th time that these two teams have met, more than any other two teams in the history of the NHL. It goes back to 1917, yo! But it was a snooze. It really was, maybe we just built it up too much, but that was really, in my estimation, Wish, a pretty boring game.
It's two teams that are essentially defensive teams. I mean, you know, bottom line, for all the Chicago firepower, it's still a system in front of Crawford that plays pretty well. And obviously Detroit knows what it has to do. It has to do exactly what it did in Game 7 against the Ducks. So
yeah.
I just thought the potential for it being a bit snoozy was there, I think.
Of all the series, I thought that would have the one with the fastest puck. Like, that would be the one where the puck would move the quickest. And we didn't see that. It still may happen. It still very well may happen, but I was looking forward to this series specifically and saying, I can't wait to see how fast these two teams move the puck, because they're probably the two quickest puck-moving teams in the NHL. Now, you look at, you know, LA and St. Louis before it, now it's San Jose, you're thinking, okay, that's going to be a good hard-hitting series. You look at Boston and the Rangers, it's going to be a grind-out series, grinding for every goal, lots of play against the boards. Chicago and Detroit was going to be one where we're amazed at how fast the puck was moving, but not so in the first game.
Not so in the first game. I'll say this about these playoffs, sir. They are starting to stack up as the goaltending playoffs. Look at the numbers, dude, for these goaltenders are sick right now. Absolutely sick. Corey Crawford last night, obviously only giving up the one goal, right? Corey Crawford, 127 goals against average. 1.27 goals against average, 950 save percentage. Jonathan Quick, 1.36 goals against, 953 save percentage with two shutouts. Sick.
Mm-hmm.
Lundqvist, 1.65, 947 save percentage. And then this bum, Antti Niemi, he's only got a 1.9 goals against and a 932 save percentage. Insane.
Yeah. But a lot of it too is, and you're right, we've said this from pretty much day one of this podcast, the 80s were an anomaly. That was a freak time where everyone wanted to win 8-7 and it was allowed to happen. Hockey is primarily a defensive sport. Like, hockey is closer in spirit and in play to soccer than it is to basketball. I think that's one of the sort of follies of the NHL always chasing these high scores. It's not an offensive game. Hockey is basically a defensive game. That's the way it's always been. That's the way the game has always been played. And going back to your point about Los Angeles with John.
Uh-oh. Did we lose Merrick?
I think so.
I think he had a point to make. Oh, he had. I think he had a point to make about Los Angeles. I'll make a point about Los Angeles. I was looking through
one.
The time on ice. Hey, there
look,
you are.
Look at. Yeah, sorry, what happened? I dropped out again?
You dropped off. Yeah, you did.
Jeez. Okay. That was weird. That's bizarre. What's happening to me?
What was the thing you wanted to say about the thing, though?
Did I make the point about Los Angeles and the defenseman yet?
No, please make it.
Four defensemen up around 21, 22 minutes. It's like perfect numbers for that D. Whether you're Regier or Doughty or Voyanoff or Scuderi, that's where the guys that are getting chimped a little bit are Jake Muzzin and Alec Martinez. But you can understand why. But Voyanoff, Doughty, Regier, yeah. Scuderi, right? Kids.
Yeah, and I was about to say time on ice. Doughty, 28.01 average time on ice. Chara, 28.54. And
I was just
Letang, 27.11.
Sorry, I was just looking at the first game between LA and San Jose. Yeah, but you're right. Doughty's rocking bigger minutes than anybody else on that squad. But just in that first game against the San Jose Sharks, it was perfect. Like the way that they used the defense for Los Angeles Kings was ideal in game one. That was painting a Picasso. And you know what? That is hockey. A 2-0 score. Defense first, right? Take care, mind your own knitting and the goals will take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. That's what we're seeing with the Los Angeles Kings. And they're scary.
That's hockey, baby.
Freaking scary.
That's hockey.
That's hockey, baby. That's what you got to know, baby doll. That's hockey.
By the way, I'm looking at face-off leaders. There's five guys over 60% that have taken a significant amount of draws. Five guys.
Who's that? Who that?
Chris Kelly's at 69.7. So he's almost 70%.
Really, eh?
Couture, 66.7. Bergeron, 62.7. Tave, 62, and then the late, great Dave Backus, 60%. Face-offs.
I wish Dave Backus were still in the playoffs. You know what would be cool? And you used to do this in the Memorial Cup. You could bring a goaltender in from another team. Wouldn't it be cool if you could pick one player from a team that you eliminated? Did we talk about this on the podcast last year?
We've talked about this before, and I like it because it reminds me of the great sci-fi film, The Chronicles of Riddick, in which we learn, Jeff Merrick, that the necromonger race has a mantra called, you keep what you kill. If you kill someone, you kill your opponent, you keep all of his weaponry for yourself. I believe this is the same principle, the keep what you kill ideal for hockey.
It.
When you eliminate the St. Louis Blues, you walk over to their bench and
you
skate up and down once or twice, and then you take your stick and you poke Dave Backus in the chest, and then
you're
all of a sudden his Blues jersey morphs into a Kings jersey and he becomes a new team.
That'd be awesome if you got to keep a player from the team you just vanquished. Because really, what are the stakes now? What happens? Okay, you lose and then you go home and that's it. No, raise the stakes. We beat you, we get one of your players. Who would Boston take? Hey, here's an interesting question, because I know the answer is one that Boston doesn't want to confront. If the Boston Bruins could take one player from the Maple Leafs, one thing that they need in that lineup, who would they take?
Phaneuf.
No, Phil Kessel. They need speed on the wing and a guy that can snap an easy goal.
I completely disagree. For the playoffs?
You think they need Phaneuf? Did you watch Phaneuf in the opening round, bro?
Did you watch how the three defensemen that are injured for Boston right now? They need
D.
Thinking tactical. I'm not taking this as some willy-nilly fantasy hockey flight of fancy like you are. I'm thinking tactically.
You're just going game to game.
Oh,
we need
right.
a D-man. Let's take one of those.
Oh, well, you know,
Jeff
Merrick.
They got Dougie Hamilton.
You got to take a game to game, minute by minute. You know, if you lose, you put it behind you. If you win, well, then you might be able to build some momentum, which is kind of
same
funny
reaction.
When you think about it, because when you win, it shouldn't matter, and when you lose, it shouldn't matter. But when you win, you build momentum, and when you lose, you forget about it like it never happened, you know?
Do you think there's momentum in the playoffs? Because I don't.
I do. Oh, I do.
You do, eh?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just with the intimacy of the games and the time off in between games, I just don't see that there being momentum from game to game.
I think there's momentum game to game, but I also definitely think there's anti-momentum game to game. I think that sometimes teams can feel it all starting to slip away and they get nervous about it. And by that I mean I've watched a lot of Washington Capitals playoff games. Playoff right?
Hey, get to the QOD. It's a good one today. Get to the QOD.
Real quick, Canuck fan in San Francisco writes in. When I used to smoke, there were strawberry, lemon, vanilla cigarettes available.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I never saw that. That would have helped me become a young
smoker. a correction from Anthony Boyer. 800th time that Detroit and Chicago have faced off in the playoffs.
I thought it was 900th time.
Yeah, he says 800.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, you know, give or take 100.
Give or take 100 games.
The question of the day is a good one, folks. So, as you know, the Lady Bing nominees were announced today, and we'll get to that heralded award in one moment. But
the
question to you is, give us one National Hockey League award that doesn't exist but should. So tweet us at Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick, hashtag at MVSW. Email it to us at puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com. Let us know what you think should be an NHL award. Doesn't
all
exist
right
now, but should.
All right, before we go to break, let me read one really quickly. Here's a thought,
please.
And this comes from our good friend Alexis, at Lexi Hates Poetry.
She hates
awards
it.
For best power play unit, best PK unit. Hockey is a team sport, so why the lack of group awards? And awards for best line. Lexi, before you go to break, I'm going to give you my best line. You ready for this, Craig Wyshynski?
Yes, please.
Lexi, I hope you brought your library card because I'm checking you out. That's my best line. Oh, you meant like hockey line. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't know what the answer to that would be.
My best
library
line
library card, bro. Yeah.
It's a good baby. One. I'm a professional blogger. And if she doesn't run away, that's love. Right
she's
there.
Yours. She's that's yours.
Right. All right, with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
We're going to get corner offices out of this one for sure, Greg. Right away, your BF detector should go off. Why do I know this crap? What's wrong with me? Are you insane?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
You and I are not quite that dissimilar.
La 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 la, hockey, hockey, hockey.
Seattle is playing excellent defense these days.
What does that even mean?
Debate hockey.
So much junior hockey knowledge in that big juicy brain.
Oh, yeah.
Pop culture.
See, I kind of look at our podcast here like Jazz Odyssey.
There's some bloggers that are great, that are entertaining, that are factual. It's fabulous.
Damn right, JD.
And more hockey.
Just what we need to shoot off the side of the barn. That's how I developed my wrist shot, shooting frozen cow patties in Lloydminster.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Merrick versus Wyshynski, huh?
This from Stephen Blank. I think it's Blank.
No?
I think there should be a manly Bing Award glorifying the league's biggest dick. His job as winner would be to just troll the Lady Bing winner all season long. I'd pay to see Chris Neal follow Matt Molson around all season and ridicule his gentlemanly conduct.
Hmm.
Yeah.
See, I think I've got a different version of what gentlemanly conduct is, because I don't think things like getting penalties or even getting in a fight precludes you from being a gentleman. I think the way the trophy is defined, or the way we look at it, is, like most trophies, a little bit suspect, but I'm sure we'll get into the Lady Bing conversation later on in the pod, the podcast here.
Yes, the Lady Bing, ladies and gentlemen. Lady Bing was announced.
It's the award that Alexander McGillney refused to come home, come back from Russia to accept. I don't want that thing.
The Lady Bing nominees for this year's award given to the player adjudged to have exhibited the best type of sportsmanship and gentlemanly conduct combined with a high standard of playing ability. Patrick Kane of the Chicago Blackhawks, Matt Molson of the Islanders, and Marty St. Louis of the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Cliff Notes version of the Lady Bing description is, of course, the highest scoring forward with the least penalty minutes. Am I correct in stating
Bingo.
That?
Bingo! Although last year was a defenseman.
Brian Campbell won last year, but I mean, he is, of course, basically a forward playing defense. We all know that.
Yep.
So,
you gotta put up points and shave down the pims.
Patrick Kane, 55 points and 8 penalty minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Molson had 44 points and 4 penalty minutes. And Marty St. Louis had 60 points and a rather elephantine 14 penalty minutes. The guy who was number one on my ballot but didn't make the cut was Logan Couture, who had 4 penalty minutes in 48 games and plays kind of a style you'd expect would maybe garner a few more penalty minutes than he has, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe Kevin Bieksa sent out a negative campaign pamphlet of some sort to all the voters to let them know that it's not sportsmanlike to embellish.
You know, I went my guy in this award is always Marty St. Louis.
Hmm.
I love the way this guy plays the game. I love the way this guy gets knocked around. And I love the way the way this guy never complains about it. It was 2011. I think it was the Pittsburgh game. Yeah, Pittsburgh and Tampa. And he caught a high stick. Sounds weird saying you high-sticked Martin St. Louis. Bear with me. He got low-sticked in the face. Little height joke there. Sorry, Marty. Got low-sticked in the face, lost a couple of teeth, and he was asked afterwards whether he thought it was a cheap play, whether there should have been a penalty or a suspension on it. And he stopped the reporter. Right? He said, hang on, guy. This is hockey. You know, I'm in the middle of action. That's going to happen to me. I'm not going to complain about it.
Mm-hmm.
At that moment, I said, Marty St. Louis is my guy.
The our good friend Adam Proto provocateur slash rival of Jeff, but basically Jeff Merrick's other, I think, is what you could say.
He's not my thing. Is we're good friends though. Like that's the weird thing.
He is your Proto. But much like Craig Custance is my other in the sense that we're always sort of feuding on various subjects because we just have a difference of opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You and Proto have had your battles in the past. So anyways.
Well, we see the game different ways.
Proto was on XM the other day, and I was interested to hear him defend Lady Bing. Defend it not as anything but an award given to a player for toughness. His take on Lady Bing is that if you're someone like Marty St. Louis, and you only have 14 penalty minutes on the season, yet you get knocked around like a pinball for games on end, but don't retaliate, that takes a special kind of toughness.
Disagree.
Surprisingly
enough.
Yeah, right.
Surprisingly enough. Some would say, you're not tough enough to defend yourself. Although others, and this is kind of where I fall in this, and you look at the many times that, you know, a player like Wayne Gretzky, for example, won the Lady Bing. You know, Wayne always won the Lady Bing because he didn't have to do those things. He didn't have to fight. He didn't have to play a robust physical style game. You know why? Because Wayne had players like Dave Semenko. Wayne had players like Marty McSorley, whom he insisted when he allowed the trade from Edmonton to Los Angeles, he insisted that Marty McSorley go along with them. Why? Because he wanted that type of physical protection. It's kind of like the mafia boss who doesn't actually kill anyone himself, but has other people do it for him. Does that make him a pacifist because his hands aren't dirty? There's no blood on his hands? You're still, you know, there's a certain blanket of protection that other people are providing for you. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're a gentlemanly player for looking the other way.
Indeed.
When someone hits you and then the entire team goes at you like a pack of dogs.
All right, joining us now on the line is a man who would never win the Lady Bing. Not because he isn't gentlemanly, but because he's not a National Hockey League player. He is Jesse Spector of the Sporting News, and he joins us here on Merrick versus Wyshynski. Hello, Jesse. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing fine, sir. Doing fine. What was your hot take on the Lady Bing finalist, Jesse?
It was the three guys that I had at the top of my ballot, so I'm in agreement. It's an award that I think gets underplayed because... I think because it's called the Lady Bing, and nobody really puts up that much respect for it. But it's to me, it's an important award. You know, it shows that you've played at a high level and you've played the game the right way. So I'm a fan of the Lady Bing, and I have been for a long time. And I'm glad to see the three guys who I thought deserved it are the three finalists.
What do you mean by the right way?
I mean playing the game clean, and it's tough to say that, you know, a guy who plays the game physically isn't playing the right way, but there's something about a skilled player who doesn't do things in a dirty manner and doesn't get himself suspended and doesn't spend a lot of time in the penalty box that I think should be appreciated. And I think that a lot of the time we don't think of a guy like Matt Molson for what he does staying on the ice and, you know, scoring goals. It's funny to say that, but we need to appreciate sometimes, you know, a guy last year like Brian Campbell and what he was able to do, playing all those minutes for the Florida Panthers and helping them win a division because he didn't take stupid penalties. He didn't get mixed up in all kinds of nonsense. And it's I think you and I probably have some differences on just exactly what that means, but it's something worth worth thinking about, I think, that you know, you stay out of the penalty box, you play the game in a clean manner. Not everybody has to be the guy that's going to the penalty box. And I heard you talking about, you know, Wayne Gretzky and Marty McSorley. Well, yeah, no, it doesn't make the Mafia boss a pacifist by any means, but at the same time, that guy goes to all the luncheons and gets your respect for, you know, building the swimming pool in the community, doesn't he?
You know, the award to me, I think there's, you know, there's a couple of different examples in this guy's career. And I'll cite one that really stands out as being, you know, gentlemanly, and I would have given this guy this award based on this one specific moment, and that's Jerome Iginla. And I can still remember, we all can. It was Hockey Night in Canada Saturday night. It was Vancouver playing the Calgary Flames, Trevor Linden's last game, and Jerome Iginla at the end of the game. Captain of the Calgary Flames made every player on the Flames come back out and go and shake Trevor Linden's hand for his contributions, not just, you know, on the ice as a competitor, but his contributions off the ice as a former president of the National Hockey League Players Association. At that moment, I said to myself, that is gentlemanly conduct, and that guy at that moment deserves a Lady Bing, but he also had four or five fights on his dance card that year, so therefore, obviously, he didn't play the game the right way. It was precluded from winning the Lady Bing Trophy. Do you think there should be audience for that type of behavior, and that should garner you, you know, a nomination for the Lady Bing, regardless of how many fights or how many hooking minors you may have on your resume that season?
I think there absolutely should be some room for that, and you know, something that I thought about in Matt Molson's candidacy, and one of the reasons that I had him at the top of my ballot was not just that he didn't take a lot of penalties this year, but the work that he does with You Can Play. And I think that that's an important thing, that he's a guy that wants the game to be a welcoming place and, you know, puts his money where his mouth is as far as that's concerned. And I think that that's important, that this is a sport that has a dirty side and a very physical side and at times can be unsavory, but there is sportsmanship to it, and I think that's a part of it. And you know, Henrik Lundqvist was on my ballot for the same sort of stuff. Just, you know, what he does as an ambassador for the game on and off the ice, I think plays into it.
Bingo. Because I think that needs to be part of the criteria as well. What you're using, you know, your cachet as an NHL hockey player to do. Both on the ice and within the NHL hockey community, but also outside as well. So I think that really should be part of the discussion and part of the criteria as well going into this thing.
Yeah, I certainly agree, and I hope that it's something that, you know, I know that I take it seriously in the way that I look at it. I don't just call up a list of, okay, who had less than X number of penalty minutes this year. I hope that my fellow writers who vote for it take it the same way and look beyond just the numbers. I know that not everybody necessarily does, but, you know, that's my hope, is that we all take these awards votes seriously and, you know, give it a good thought when we fill out those ballots.
I mostly look at plus minus for the Lady Bing, because I feel like if you're more positive than negative, then chances are you're quite a sportsman. Jesse, Rangers-Bruins in the second round could be a pretty brutal series, could be a rather low-scoring series. If you had told me before the playoffs that these two teams advance both in seven-game series without a single goal from Rick Nash, Brad Marchand, Tyler Seguin, or Jaromír Jágr combined, I would have asked you to put me in a straitjacket.
Yeah, that's sometimes the way it goes, though, isn't it, in a seven-game series? And especially, you know, the Rangers, it was weird because Rick Nash hits the post in Game 2 in Washington, and I wonder still how different that series is and how different things are for Rick Nash in that series. If that puck goes 6 inches to the right and goes into the net instead of hitting the post, you know, the Rangers probably win that game 1-0, probably not a seven-game series, and Rick Nash maybe has three or four goals in it. Maybe that's what gets him going. You don't know. And Tyler Seguin, really the same thing. In Game 5 against the Leafs, he was, I thought, Boston's best offensive player, and he took a lot of heat from everybody around that series for not getting goals in the back of the net, but it doesn't mean that he wasn't contributing. It doesn't mean that he wasn't playing well. It's just that, you know, sometimes you play seven games and you don't score any goals. That's the way it is in low-scoring series a lot of the time, and I think that in this series we will see goals from those players who didn't score goals in the first round because, well, they're due and they're good players.
Yeah, I'm curious as well, and I think everyone's, you know, fascinated to find out the answer to this question starting this evening. Which team is the real Boston Bruins team? The one we saw for six games or the one we saw for 11 minutes?
I think it's the one that we saw for 11 minutes. I think that that's the best of the Bruins. The question is whether they can do that against the Rangers over the course of a series, and I don't know if we're going to see the real Bruins because of all the injuries on their defense, but I think that you know, they are a Jekyll and Hyde team, and they've admitted it, and they've talked about it ad nauseum, how inconsistent they've been. But I think that we saw what the Bruins are capable of in game one of that series. We saw what the Bruins were capable of in games three and four, and we saw what the Bruins were capable of in the last 11 minutes of game seven. They're a really, really good hockey team. I just wonder if matching strength for strength with a team like the Rangers, who are built so similarly to them, whether that lack of health on the defensive end of things is going to play a role.
You're, Jesse, one of the few people with the stones to ask John Tortorella questions in a press conference. Unafraid of what might happen, unafraid of him walking out or any of those things. But my question to you is, you know, we all know the circus act that goes along with John in these playoffs. What do you think of him as a playoff coach, as a tactician, as a motivator? You know, it kind of gets obscured with all the other stuff sometimes. What do you think of him as a coach in the playoffs?
I think he's a really good motivator. I think that he gets his players fired up to play for him and to play in that system, because it's not easy to go out and say, all right, we're blocking a ton of shots here. And yeah, are the Rangers more than block shots? Yeah, but the block shots are a big part of their identity, and playing a tight defensive game is what they rely on, especially in the playoffs, and I think that they have to be motivated for that, and Tortorella gets them motivated to do that. As a tactician, I have my issues with him, because I think that he does change his lines a little bit too often. I don't think that he always has the patience to let lines work out and see what they can do, and I think that that is a hindrance at times, and one of the reasons that the Rangers don't score a lot of goals is that they have trouble developing chemistry as lines, whereas you look at a guy like Claude Julien, who keeps his lines together and come hell or high water, and you know, he'll change them only when he feels it is absolutely positively necessary to do so, because it's just not working anymore. And it's really more of a last resort for him, and I think that you saw that happen in Game 7 against the Leafs, and it was the right move to make. With Tortorella, it's more of a juggling act, and he doesn't like to talk about it, which makes it a little bit more difficult to deal with. He doesn't give you his rationale for why he does what he does, and I think that sometimes that gets in the way. And overall, though, I think that he's a heck of a playoff coach, and I think the record speaks for that, what he's been able to do, you know, not only with the Rangers but with Tampa Bay before.
So here's the question then, if you're the if you're John Tortorella, Jesse. Ryan McDonagh and Dan Girardi, if you're John Tortorella, are they out there against the Krejci line or the Bergeron line?
I'd have them out there against the Krejci line, because that's more of a one-way sort of a line, and you want your best defensive guys on against them. I think that if you're bringing the Bergeron line, you want to be able to try to generate a little bit against them as well and make Patrice Bergeron work on defense. If you're letting Patrice Bergeron just be a one-way offensive player, you're really putting yourself in a hole, because you need to make things difficult for him. He's a great defensive forward, and they're the line that Claude Julien is going to match up against your best offensive guys. So I think that you put your best offensive guys out against them and put, you know, your second D pair, probably Stroman and Delzato, out against them and make them work for it. Make them work hard and take away, by being in their end of the rink, take away that offense that they can bring, rather than trying to just use Girardi and McDonagh on them as a shutdown and going from there.
And then the obvious follow-up, and I'm sure Jesse saw this coming a mile away, Chara then goes up against the Brassard line with Rick Nash, or the line of Hagelin, Stepan, and Callahan.
I think if you're Zdeno Chara, you're going to probably see a lot of both of those lines, because you know, there's maybe no Ferentz, maybe no Seidenberg. I think that we saw how much Chara played in game 6 and 7, and especially in game 7. And, yeah, I would primarily use him against Rick Nash because you need to put a physical defenseman on Rick Nash if you're going to have any hopes of containing him because he is so strong. But it's not like Zanitar is not going to see the other Rangers' forward lines because he's going to be playing a ton. And I think that having the 2 days off in between games 1 and 2 is helpful to the Bruins in that respect, that Zanitar can be a little bit fresher and you can afford to play him more in game 1 than you otherwise might.
Last one for me, sir. Your thoughts on the other Eastern Conference semifinal with the Pittsburgh Penguins and the pesky Ottawa Senators.
Hey,
the Senators are pesky, indeed, and a good team, but I think that the Islanders were a tougher matchup for the Senators because of their speed. I don't see that same element from the Senators, which isn't to say that they're a slow team, but they don't have that lightning burst of a Michael Grabner that the Islanders have, or they don't have an offensive player who's as skilled and as powerful as John Tavares, who can really test the Penguins' defense the same way. So I think that this is an easier matchup for the Penguins, and for now, with Tomas Vokunen in goal, you don't have that issue at the other end of the ice. I don't think we've seen the last of Marc-Andre Fleury in these playoffs, but for now, this is an easier matchup for the Penguins than the Islanders was, and I expect it to be a faster series.
And curious too, and Jesse, last one for me. To me, this Ottawa Senators squad needs better performances from two Swedes that are at different places in their career. Daniel Alfredsson, who was a little bit light in game 1, and that's being generous, and also Erik Karlsson, who I kind of feel bad saying that about, considering he looks to me to be a tired hockey player. He did in game 1 anyhow, and on some of those pivots, both inside and outside, he looked really slow and looked like he's not even close to being 100%. Your thoughts on the two Swedes for the Sens, the old one and the young one?
Yeah, I think Alfredsson is in a tough spot, having had to carry the load so much for the Senators as they dealt with the injuries during the season, and maybe he's a little worn out right now, and dealing with a big physical Pittsburgh defense isn't going to do him any favors. As far as Karlsson goes, yeah, I don't think that he's 100% by any means. And, you know, it's miraculous that he's able to return and get out there, and the skills that he has are still evident. But he's not the player that won the Norris Trophy last year, I don't think. He hasn't looked like that at all to me.
There you go. All right, Jesse Spector, enjoy the series. Enjoy Beantown, sir, and all of the libacious wonders that Beantown has to offer. And
thanks so much.
We will talk to you soon, brother. Take care.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right, be well, guys. Thanks.
Jesse Spector. That's an interesting, you know, that's interesting. A goaltender for Lady Bing.
That's not a bad idea, right?
Listen, there's nothing in the definition that says it has to be a forward or a defenseman. It just says a player. You know how many times a goaltender has won it? Let me check. Oh, yeah, 0.
Yeah. That's tonight, game 1 of that series, along with game dose of the San Jose Sharks, Los Angeles Kings. Kings up 1-0 in the series after a vintage dominating performance in game 1. Obviously, as we do this podcast, the Rafi Torres hearing is done. We don't know quite yet what's happened with him, but in-person hearing, Jeff Merrick, would seem to indicate that this is going to be a lengthy suspension.
Not necessarily. Let's not forget, too, that if it goes above 5, Rafi Torres can appeal it, and it goes to an independent arbitrator. We haven't seen that yet.
No, we haven't.
Right? That's one of the things the NHL has shied away from, right? The 6-game or plus suspensions, because I don't know if they want to test what happens with an independent arbitrator. But
it's a lot different than it used to be, where the independent arbitrator would be.
Oh, yeah.
So, I hired the guy who gave you the suspension, so I'm That's guessing right. Maybe he got it right.
Yeah, I'm going with him. The Irish kid grew up playing in Mimico, Kielsdale Arena, in Weston Arena. Yeah, that guy. He's right. That would be interesting. I am hoping for the good of the game that this is a meeting where Shanahan says, Rafi, that's too close. No, you didn't, you didn't jump off the ice at him. That's true. But it's getting a little too close for our comfort. you're on watch, and we're just reminding you. So a little bit of a cup check. You know, your baseball coach would come around, you know, with the little aluminum bat and give you a little cup check before the game, play Little League. I'm hoping that's what this is. All right, funny. Boys, everyone wearing their cups? Tap, tap, tap. I'm hoping that's what this is more than anything else because I still saw it. It wasn't a charge. You coasted into him. It wasn't, you know, a principal point of contact. PPOC! To me, it didn't look at the head. It looked like when he was going for the shoulder, it was a player that was hunched over, that was leaning. The question then that we have to have with ourselves is, do you still want that hit in the game? Remember when Rule 48 first came in?
Do I?
When Rule 48 first came in, everybody said, no, 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 no. It's only going to be about that Matt Cook on Mart Savard hit, the Mike Richards on David Booth. That's the only hit. We're not worried about any. Well, every other hit is fine. And I kept saying to anyone that listened, this is a slippery slope we're going down. Once that becomes an issue and that becomes a rule and that becomes a violation, then there'll be more hits of a similar nature. So hits sort of bleed into each other. And then all of a sudden, now we're judging every hit. Now we're having this conversation. Do we want that hit that we saw with Rafi Torres and Jared Stoll? Do we want that type of hit still in the game, Greg Wyshynski? And it's all because we introduced rule. And you know what? Rule 48 was about two hits. How many hits are there every year in the NHL? And this was about
It was about the Richards hit and the Cook hit on Savard?
Yeah.
Those
that's
two?
What it was about. That was what, and now from that we have the slippery slope of judging hits.
I disagree with that. I think those two might have been first of all, you're completely discounting what happened to Sid. Wasn't Sid post Rule 48? I'm sorry,
nope.
Pre-Rule 48?
No, that was Rule 48 came to him in that spring, right after Matt Cook. Because remember, Colin Campbell said, we don't have anything in the rule book against Matt Cook.
Right.
We don't have that. There's nothing.
I thought the Sid stuff was a harbinger for that. It was a catalyst for that,
no,
too.
No, it was Cook. It began with Booth and Richards, but then it really hit its zenith with Cook and Savard.
Yeah, we'll see here. I think it's going to be, I mean, if he's getting called in for a meeting, I have a feeling it's going to be like six games.
Well, then don't you think that Torres says, okay, I want to appeal it, and then we have our first arbitration?
Would it though?
I want to see who's named as the arbitrator. That to me would be the fascinating one.
Oh.
Because you knew, like, remember, like, the last big arbitration we had was the Ilya Kovalchuk contract, right? And didn't you get the feeling, Wish, that whomever was named arbitrator in that case, this was going to be the last arbitration he ever did in the NHL because one side was going to sour on him so heavy that side would never agree to have him as an arbitrator again. But here's the problem. If that hit is like a two-game suspension for Justin Abdelkader, for example, because that's been the benchmark that's set in these playoffs,
mm-hmm.
If it's Rafi Torres, to your point, with all the previous convictions, you're right. It automatically does become a six-game suspension.
Yeah.
But by the standards set in these playoffs, it does kind of feel like a two-game suspension, if you're going to call it at all, which personally I don't think they should. But what am I? I'm a dinosaur when it comes to this kind of stuff. Do you want that hit out of the game? One player reaching for the puck in a vulnerable position and someone hits him.
I think
get a free pass? Does that player get a free pass?
I'm trying to answer the question.
Sorry.
If you want to be consistent across the board with contact with the head, you got to get that hit out of the game.
But that's the problem, though. They're not consistent.
Well, that's true.
We haven't seen that consistency. That's the issue. That's what's frustrating to a lot of not just hockey players, but hockey fans.
And to answer your question about who should hear the Rafi Torres hearing, obviously it should be Guy Sirota, federal mediator and Craig Ferguson fan, making his triumphant return to the world of hockey. One more thing before we get to the question of the day. So Alex Ovechkin's had a good week. Ovechkin lost, this is from our friend Michael Alper, Ovechkin lost the last two games he played this year, both elimination games, by a combined 10 goals, because Russia lost to, the U.S. today in the World Championships.
Oh, did they? I didn't see that. Oh, how much they get pumped?
Hang on 1 second. I don't give a shit about the... Oh, actually, that was the greatest part of
You brought it up.
I know, that was the greatest part about the Adam Oates press conference yesterday, by the way, was him just shitting all over the World Championships. 8-3 final... Team USA stunned the defending world champion Russians 8-3 in Helsinki.
Hey, did Gibson play? Did John Gibson play net? Do you have a game sheet there?
I don't have the game sheet in front of me, no.
All right. I'm curious.
Sorry.
He's been fantastic for them.
Well,
hello.
Oh, yeah,
Anaheim.
Yeah. I'm
hello,
sorry. Anaheim. Yeah, they started Gibson over Ben Bishop.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Anaheim, you got a great one coming. Good for you. Sorry, Maple Leafs fans. By the way, I think we made this point in the podcast before. The Toronto Maple Leafs made a trade with the Anaheim Ducks to move up in the draft to select Tyler Biggs, and they had to give the Anaheim Ducks a second-round pick. You know that second-round pick turned into Greg Wyshynski?
John Gibson.
Sorry, Maple Leafs fans. Wah, wah.
But
you
got
Tyler Biggs.
It goes beyond the issues. It goes beyond the issues that Ovechkin has had in losing his last game in the National Hockey League and losing the last game in the World Championships, two eliminations within the span of a week. There's also the issue that his KHL team that he played for during the lockout, I believe, also went on to win the KHL championship without him. Dynamo Moscow won the 2013 Gagarin Cup over Traktor
Chelyabinsk.
Despite not having Ovechkin on the roster. So two teams Ovechkin played for, and one team Ovechkin played for but was no longer playing for, and the one that he was absent from won the championship while the other ones did not.
Tough sled. Who else played on that team? Nicholas Backstrom, he came back. Obviously, Leo Komarov was on that team.
Oh, that Dynamo Moscow team?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Edzo. Who's on the Dynamo Moscow team, Edzo?
A bunch of people there.
Hey, Philip Novak was on that team. Oh, yeah. I remember him from Regina Pass.
It's actually not a lot of people I've heard of.
No, nor. I'm looking over it now. Oof.
Yeah, right?
This might as well be a menu. A Russian menu. I got no clue. No clue.
The question of the day.
But you know
was,
what? Yes. It goes back to yesterday. These are the depth Russian players that should be in the NHL that aren't, because they can make more money, even though it comes in a brown paper bag and you get paid weekly by the bag man. You can make more money in the KHL if you're one of those depth guys.
Question of the day was, give us NHL awards that you'd like to see that right now don't exist. These are the things that we ask on this very program, and we'd like you to chime in. Jim Schweigert writes in, the Claude Lemieux Award for the least gentlemanly player. I think the players should vote on it, too. Who wins it this year? P.K. Subban for the tourist fight alone? P.K. Subban, ungentlemanly. What do you think?
The ungentlemanly-like player. Mm-hmm. Oh, the anti-Lady Bing. Who would win the ungentlemanly-like player? Have we had anything that's really, I mean, of course, Ottawa Senators fans and a certain owner would say Matt Cook, for the play on Carlson. Have we had anything that's been like?
We've not had an Andy Sutton multiple offense kind of thing this year, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking is, like, we haven't had that guy. But then we keep hearing how there's no respect in the game anymore from various coaches. Anyhow.
Chris Neal would be up there for it.
He's sneaky dirty. Sneaky dirty.
This year. Ryan Thomas writes in.
Oh, Pat Coletta. Going away. Pat Coletta.
Oh, right. Good call.
Jesus. Yeah, Pat Coletta.
Ryan Thomas writes in, the award that needs to exist is the NHL's favorite goaltender as voted on by the players. Jonas Gustafsson would have been a lock for the last 3 years.
You know what they do in the OHL? They have, at the end of the year, a coaches poll. It's sort of like it's an award. There are various awards that are given out. For like the OHL's hardest hitter. They break it down by way of conference. Hardest hitter, fastest skater, best shot, clutch player. That would be interesting if all 30 coaches in the NHL got together and did that. So you do like, you know, your regular NHL awards voted on mainly by the Professional Hockey Writers Association. And then you do different awards for individual skill sets. And it's all voted on by the coaches.
Greg, that's interesting. Greg Winger, by the way. A last name no hockey writer can mispronounce. Boy, you don't test me, Mr. Greg. The award that I'd most like to see is the Taylor Stevens Award for the best D pair.
Ooh. the Taylor Stevens for the best D pair. I get it, because it's a pair of boobs. This is a defense.
Obviously,
pair,
the
guys.
Name is a joke, but I think it is important to acknowledge the often symbiotic nature of defensive partners in the modern National Hockey League. Instead of trying to assign individual responsibility to great D pairs, Weber, Suter most notably, why not recognize that you really can't separate the two? That's a very good thought, only because the Jennings honors two goaltenders. Why isn't there an award for best D pairing?
Well, the issue then becomes, you know, unlike the old days where, you know, your D pairings were set and they stayed that way for the entire season, D pairings now kind of get jumbled around during the year, right? That's I love it in theory, and I love the idea. You know, Lexi wrote in earlier about, you know, the best lines. And I love that idea, but the problem is coaches put them in a blender all the time. So it's kind of, because then you're awarding, you know, best line based on, you know, the 45 games they played or the 62 games that they played together. You know what I mean?
Makes sense. Makes sense.
That's what makes it kind of hard. But, you know, I like it in spirit because to Lexi's point earlier, and it's a good one, this is a team sport. Yeah, we give out these individual awards for it. So we give out individual awards in a team sport, but somehow you have a beef with the shootout, which is an individual play within the context of a team sport. So you should have a problem with the awards then because it's not a team award. Because a team sport, it only should be team awards, right, Greg?
No, that's not true because if you win the Art Ross, it means you've attempted a pass, which is more than we can say for the shootout. Brenton Redelick writes in. I have two awards for you. The Sean Avery Award, awarded to the player who has excelled in holding the principles of being a douche during the regular season. And the Salming Award, awarded to the NHL player who has displayed the most gruesome injury on live television during the regular season. Which will
that
be
would have
decided
been Taylor Hall last year.
Which will be decided by views later on the NHL.com website. Obviously, there hopefully will be a postseason version of the award so Lars Eller can win something, because obviously that's probably the most gruesome one that we've seen.
Pool of blood, yeah, that's a good one. I like that one. I like that one. The most gruesome injury. The Boreas.
Vanessa Sanchez writes in
his face.
Oh Jesus. Vanessa Sanchez writes in, Norris Trophy should be redefined and another trophy introduced so there's an award for best offensive defenseman and another for the stay at home guys who don't get enough credit now. Random Penguin Sean Pronger.
Yeah, brief random penguin. Yep. I mean, I'm cool with that. I'm cool fragmenting that award. Are you good with fragmenting that one, Wish?
I would
How many awards do you think we can fragment? I think that one for sure. The Norris can be fragmented.
Well, I feel like you don't need to fragment the Hart because the Lindsay is her most outstanding player, so you've got that, right?
So you got that. So no point in fragmenting the Hart. Although, I mean, there's not a lot of goaltenders that ever get in that conversation, but geez, man, they are the most valuable player. Like, really, if you ask anyone, like, when you really honestly look at your team, your goalie is always your most valuable player, and they never win that award. Mm. So do you need to fragment it to make something for goaltenders? Then you say, well, no, hang on, there already is a goaltending award, and that's the Vezina.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have the same prestige as the Hart, though. It doesn't have the same prestige as the Hart.
Does every position need an MVP award? I don't know.
We had a conversation about the Selke yesterday, and that's only centermen that win it somehow.
Jonathan Cable, best dive with fan voting, of course. Seth Kumpf, the Who Award for those hyped players that just vanished into the wind.
The Fabian Brunstrom. Fabian Brunstrom Award. The Ray Stazak Award. That's who it would be. Ray Stazak.
Kurt writes in, the best player who repeatedly gets scratched, bench sent down in favor of an over-the-hill mediocre veteran. That sounds like it's very specific to somebody.
The guy who's up and down between the NHL team and the minors the most. And usually, you know what, Wish? It's usually with a team that's right up against the salary cap. So they're going day to day. So they need to have the guy down. They need to have the guy down in the minors just for cap purposes. So the poor guy just spends his entire time on the road, not really practicing with either team, just sort of shuttling back and forth. It wouldn't be part of the Green Initiative, by the way, at all, flying a guy back and forth between his minor league. I would have a hard time reconciling that with the NHL's Go Green Initiative, having a guy for cap purposes just spend his entire year on a plane going back and forth.
Nico K writes in, I've always liked the EA Sports trophy they had in the EA Sports NHL series franchise mode. It was an award for the player who had the most appearances on the three stars list. It looks like a good way to see which player had the most games where they made a big impact. Is there a three stars award for the end of the season? I forget if there is or not.
A three star? Well,
if they tally them up.
Individual teams do.
Well, NHL.com does three stars every night, kind of like we do. I wonder if they ever tally them up.
I don't know. That'd be a good one. Just make it NHL.com. Just award it online. NHL.com award. Simple. Do you guys tally your three stars? Hang on. Do you guys tally your three stars?
No. We don't.
Idea. Duh.
I know.
Come on.
Patrick Lieberg writes in, how about the most annoying reporter award as voted on by the players and coaches?
As voted on by Duncan Keith.
That's right. That's funny. You know, it's funny. The Lady Bing that we talked about today is an award that, frankly, I would not have any problem if it was taken away from the writers and given to somebody else. And that somebody else is the officials. Give it to the referees and linesmen. Like, they know better than we do whether a guy is a sportsmanlike, gentlemanly player, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. That is an excellent point, actually.
That's who should vote on it, not us.
That's a really good point.
We don't know nothing about nothing when it comes to that kind of thing.
I'm
we can't even hear what they say on the ice. Who knows? Maybe Marty St. Louis is a vicious chirper who can't who always goes after your mom. You know, we don't know that for sure.
Ooh. Oh, well, by the way. Yeah. Let me ask you, because how do you feel about chirps in general? Is there anything that's out of bounds in your estimation? Nothing's out of bounds? Okay, let me ask you this one.
You're doing everything you can to get somebody off their game.
Okay. Does it include this? There is a player who is a first-round draft pick. I've got to be really vague about this. Who is a first-round draft pick of a team in the National Hockey League. He plays junior hockey right now. And occasionally he... I shouldn't say loses it, but he's kind of got a temper. Anyway, he was a crack baby. And players on opposing teams, pretty much every single time he's on the ice, chirp him about being a crack baby. Is that offside? Is that too much?
I mean, it's not... It's not
that's hitting you, that's hitting mom, that's...
Yeah, it's not something that you want to hear. But honestly, it's like... Yeah, it's all in bounds, isn't it?
That is.
If you're on the ice, in the confines of the rink, and your job is to try to anger someone until they do something regrettable so their team becomes disadvantaged for it?
You might
come off as a disgusting human being for it. You might go to hell for it. But
I know.
What are we going to do? Police Eric?
I know. I'm with you. I like the idea that there is a separate reality when you play sports. That there's a separate, specifically for hockey. Like, I like the idea that there is a separate morality that goes along with the separate code that goes along with. I like that that's a different reality for those players. I really do like that. Just when I found that, and I just found that one out a couple of weeks ago, I'm like, oh man, that one really, I don't know why. That one really just didn't sit with me well. That ain't his choice, man.
It's a deplorable thing to say, but that said,
he hears. I wish honestly, this guy hears it every single night. Yep, that's what he's gone through. Well, that's what he's gone through his junior hockey career here.
It's brutal, but like, you know, listen, and I feel I know that it needs to be a different world out there because of you can play and all this other stuff, and now we have cameras on people to try to read their lips when they start chirping other players and that kind of thing. I know where we are as a society, and I know where we are in hockey, but like, I'm always going to be that guy who, you know, behind closed doors and not in this microphone, goes for the single worst joke available just for the shock and all of it. And B is completely understanding of how things get out of hand within the confines of the rink and when you're trying to say something to get somebody off their game or when you're saying something in the heat of the moment.
Yeah. I know. Because I'm normally down with that. Like, you know what? Say whatever you want. Different world. Different world, different standards. I don't know. That one just hit me. It's like, oof, man. Because that ain't your choice. You're not.
No, anyway. It's not your choice. But it's not your choice if you're short either. No, I'm not saying it's the same thing.
It's a little bit different between hey Squirt versus hey Cracky. Like, come on.
You sure? Because I mean, I think short people are like, you know. One last thing today from Katie Carrera of the Washington Post on Alex Ovechkin, who we spoke about just earlier. Alex Ovechkin played the final two games of the Capitals' first-round series against the New York Rangers with a hairline fracture in his left foot, according to a league source with direct knowledge of the winger's injury.
So why did they let him go play with the World Championship team then? Did Washington know this?
The fracture will only require rest to heal, the source said. Skating could not make the injury worse, the source said. So Ovechkin played with it through the rest of Game 6 and Game 7.
That's fine. But my question then becomes, if you're the Washington Capitals and know your player is injured, why are you greenlighting him to go play for Russia at the World Championships?
It means a lot to his country, Merrick.
That's right.
That's what it was said yesterday.
Oh, boy. I know.
Yeah.
Because it comes from up on high with Ted Leonsis. Alex can do no wrong, and Alex can do whatever he wants.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. If I'm a Caps fan, I hear that. Like, what? We let our injured superstar go play the World Championships? I ain't too happy about that, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Nope.
Indeed. All right, everybody. That's the show for
on that happy
today.
Note.
I am on that happy note. I am Greg Wachinski of Yahoo Sports.
Crack babies and hockey players and fractured feet. Yeah. Welcome to our podcast. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope it's a great one. Hope it's a sunny one in your life. Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet tonight back on the desk. Hockey Central tonight, covering up both playoff games and action from around the world of hockey. 11 o'clock Eastern and 1 a.m. With who am I with tonight? John Shannon and Neil Smith will be my stewardesses tonight on the program.
Stewardesses.
Yeah.
That's funny. I will be up in New York tomorrow at Yahoo headquarters doing the show from there.
Really?
Yep.
Hey.
And that'll be a fun time.
Oh, by the way, I've got a packed day tomorrow. Can you do the trivia tomorrow? I'm
just
swamped.
We have meetings for these.
Yeah, but I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to talk to you tomorrow morning. Because honestly,
busy,
I'm that
huh?
swamped. Yeah, I'm that busy tomorrow morning.
Man,
you want to just have our show meeting right now as we finish off today's podcast?
Sure. We'll figure it out tomorrow. All right.
All right.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.